Thank you. And thank you for the invitation to address this subject. I've often been asked to address this to homeschooling conventions, and of course the experience of homeschoolers often is you feel something is working, something intuitively it feels right, it feels like it is there, but you're swimming against the stream of public sentiment and prevailing attitudes, and so you feel something intuitively is there. But the problem with intuition is it's knowledge without words. It's a gut feeling, and so it's very difficult to have confidence in the process when you can't actually explain it, unless of course you're very very grounded in your own intuition. And so as a developmental scientist, though my question has been different, is how do I explain the stories of success? How do I explain the research that is coming out that is so favorable to homeschooling? Now, this research is primarily American and Canadian, and so because there's large groups of homeschoolers there, and so the studies are finally coming. It's becoming a legitimate subject of study for graduate students, master's students, and dissertation students, and so the question is how do we explain this? And to explain anything, to explain a research fact, you need a model. And my advantage is I've been working at a model for a long time in terms of attachment-based developmental model, putting the pieces together, and so that I have something that I can apply to that to try and make sense. So that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to try in a bit less than an hour to make sense of the evidence. And we'll divide this, the homeschooling and developmental science, we'll divide this into the concerns, the evidence, and the explanation. And so we'll divide it into this. Now, just a word on developmental science. The science involving children falls into two very different kinds of camps. There are those who focus primarily on results, behavioral compliance, achievement, conduct, and so primarily on results. That would be the behavioral learning camp. And there are those of us that focus on a much different topic. Is the realization of human potential, about whether a child is coming to realize his potential. As you can imagine, some people say, well, the research, does the research support or does it not support? Well, the questions are different. The questions are very different. And so the question of a behaviorist, of course, is does it lead to more compliance? Does it lead to greater achievement? The question of a developmentalist, is there any indication that this child is moving to realize his or her potential as a human being? Is there evidence of growth? Is there emotional health? And what are the indicators of this? And so many people don't realize this, and they think just research is research. It doesn't. It generates facts, and then you have to put all the pieces together, join all the dots until a picture emerges. And so my questions are, to know my biases here, my questions are first and foremost not simply conduct or compliance or achievement. My questions are the realization of human potential. In the end, the children who are realizing their human potential tend to have more achievement, tend to be able to, there is more well-being, and so it answers the question ultimately, but not initially. And so that's what I mean by developmental science. Neuroscience is firmly in developmental science. Neuroscience has come all about the realization of the potential of the development of the brain, and so it is firmly in there. So science has moved now to shift towards neuroscience. I have a son that's going into neuroscience, and we have such interesting discussions because we come from exactly the same paradigm professionally, but he comes from it from the brain development end of it, and I go in terms of the human potential end of it, and of course the two dovetail beautifully. And so the concerns, the evidence, and the explanation. So the concerns, well, first of all, homeschooling creates social misfits. I think this is one of the great concerns of one of the most popular books in North America on nurture, the nature-nurture assumption. She explicitly stated that you've got to be crazy to homeschool your children. Why would anybody want their children to not be normal, to be misfits? The only reason for doing this is that if children were being so wounded in their school environments, that could be the only explanation, but at the cost of creating weirdos, and so on. And so this tends to be a prevailing assumption, even in countries where homeschooling is more common. I experienced this. This was very strong in France. This idea, the fear of not being normal is a huge fear among many, a huge fear in the United States, and the fear of not being normal. And so that is a driving paranoia, driving fear of alarm in society. And so they do not understand this. That is one. Homeschooling deprives a child of normalizing experiences. This goes with it. How in the world are they ever going to be normal? This deprives them of the normalizing experiences. Again, the great concern of not being normal. This is huge. If you haven't been cursed with this concern, of course, it's much easier. If you would like to be exceptional rather than normal, then this doesn't bother you. But there's many who simply want to be normal, and then it bothers them tremendously because school is the great cookie cutter of the world. You sit like you do in desks and so on, and you have this curriculum, and it's a great cookie cutter. And so we make sure that everybody fits exactly, what cookies we're cutting in that particular society. Homeschooling deprives a child of higher education opportunities. This is all often an argument from those parents who are more educated themselves. They're very, very concerned about depriving their children of this. Homeschooling deprives a child of instruction from trained teachers and standardized curriculum. That is a concern, of course, from the educational system itself. That is always what teachers are saying. They can't understand why, when they have invested 5 years in getting their degree and studying a curriculum and pedagogy, how a parent could ever be so arrogant as to think that they could do that job. It just does not make any sense. The dissonance is way too much. And they can't comprehend that this would be so. Homeschooling deprives children with special needs from receiving the professional help they require. This is a complaint mainly from the medical profession. And the medical profession is based upon diagnosis and early intervention. They work with the school system, generally speaking, in most countries. They work with the school system for early detection. And so they want to know if your child has Asperger's or attention deficit. They want to know if your child has sensory integration problems so that they can apply the appropriate medication and get the proper professionals. The idea here is that children with special needs should not be entrusted to parents. They need to be got to professionals right away. Of course, we know that the medical profession has no background or training at all in the special needs, so this is rather ridiculous, but nevertheless, they don't have any background on how children develop, but this is how the medical profession is extremely arrogant in many countries, and so this is largely from that angle. Homeschooling is for religious and political fanatics who are wanting to protect their children from mainstream influences. Again, this is the idea of creating misfits. We've got to get these children into places of normalizing experiences. rather than look at a pluralistic society in which it is healthiest when it gives lots of room for individual expression, individual religious expression, cultural expression, that this actually is a mark and indicator of society. Well, I'm sure there's many more, but I hope I captured some of the arguments that you will see. So those are the concerns, generally speaking. There's other concerns, of course, when I have been a consultant to parents, there's personal concerns, of course, is will I be able to do it? What if I don't know the curriculum? How can I be both a mother and teach my children? There's all kinds of other concerns, but I'm not going to address those ones here. I'm primarily addressing not the personal anxieties and apprehensions about doing this. I'm presenting more the concerns that actually are the argument against homeschooling, and so the concerns there. The evidence is mounting. It started just before 2000 in terms of a critical review in the Peabody Journal of homeschooling research. This is an actual educational journal in the United States, and it was a critical review that actually ended up answering some of the very key questions and the concerns that I have just mentioned, and finding that to people's surprise that had the concerns, that the evidence was amazing and in favor of homeschoolers. The Fraser Institute in Canada, 2004 review of studies, has something like 120 references, and there should be a new one coming out, which would be much bigger yet. There's virtually, that I know of, nothing that actually supports any of the concerns. No evidence. All the evidence is in the contrary. So the evidence looks something like this. Homeschool children spend less time on their studies and yet get consistently better results on standardized tests where states and provinces have standardized tests. Homeschool children are more motivated learners. This comes across over and over again, more interested and curious, more hungry to learn. Homeschool children demonstrate greater maturity. There is greater empathy, greater considerateness, greater ability more self-control, various evidences of maturity. Homeschool children score significantly higher on standardized university entrance exams. This is not even moderately, this is very significantly higher. And so this has come to favor students for some of the Ivy League universities. Stanford was so impressed with homeschoolers that they created a particular program for homeschoolers, simply to make sure that they would not be jeopardized from going into any major university in the world. And so when you enroll your child in there, they make sure that they can prepare you in your home education environment to be able to open the doors of the world's best universities for you. They were so impressed with this. And so the answer that it's depriving children of higher educational opportunities is becoming less and less a concern. And as homeschoolers are becoming more and more favored by the top universities in the world. Homeschool children manifest less behavioral problems. This comes across in many different ways. Less diagnosis, less conduct problems. Homeschool children score higher on socialization measures and outcomes. Now, this is the thing that turns everything on its head, is that homeschool children actually score higher on socialized measures, empathy, friendliness, consideration, societal integration. So this is in direct contradiction to most fears on this. And then homeschool children have higher self-esteem and enjoy significantly higher life satisfaction scores. So I won't be dealing with the argument in terms of economics, of course, that it's much cheaper for the state to engage in this. They're fools not to. That's a whole nother question. That's not developmental science. That's economics. And so I'm going to actually limit myself to simply developmental science here, not the argument, very powerful argument, that if the state really understood this, they would be saving so much money that the economic argument is powerful. I've summarized my explanation, the overview, and I'll go through this. Summarized the explanation into two basic things. One, homeschooling and home care is more likely, by home care, I mean family-based care, is more likely to provide the conditions conducive to a child fully developing the human capacity for relationship and for cultivating and preserving the child-parent attachment. In one word, attachment. In one word, attachment. Conducive. Conducive is making it easy to, creating the conditions for. Yes. In one word, it's attachment. Attachment, because attachment has become our understanding of this, the preeminent need of children. It is the basis of all development. The brain is developed in the context of attachment, and so attachment has become key. And so if we get to the key for all organisms, if we get to a context in which attachment develops properly, this is going to be the most powerful factor in the realization of human potential. So I'll explore that. So attachment, the homeschooling is attachment friendly. It produces the context in which attachments develop, and I'll go through that. And secondly, homeschooling and home care is more likely to provide the conditions conducive to preserving healthy emotional functioning. All neuroscience has discovered that emotion is primary to the development of the brain and to the development of human potential, that emotion is the engine of maturation. We used to think it was experience, and so people had to get experiences, intellectual stimulation, they had to have the right experiences. This was all 60s, 70s, and 80s. Everything had to do with experience. You made sure your children got the right experiences. It turns out to have nothing to do with brain development. Brain development has nothing to do with taking in. It has everything to do with building the networks, building the problem-solving capacities. This is done actually during play for a young child, not work, but play, not school. And all of the research on play, in which that kind of context, that emergent play, done in the context of attachment, a child has to have the right feelings in order to grow up. And so the question is where do the right feelings occur? Do they occur in school or do they occur at home? And that's a very simple question. Where do the right feelings occur? Do they occur at home or do they occur at school? Now, if we know at home the right feelings don't occur, then it's better for a child to be at school. But if the right feelings can occur at home, then this is what's going to lead to brain development. It's going to lead to healthy emotional functioning and maturation. So those are the two basic issues now that we face in developmental psychology. The basic issues are that a child basically needs right relationships and soft hearts. They need right relationships and soft hearts. These are the bottom lines, the bottom conditions of healthy development for humans. So the question is where are those most likely to occur? Where are those most likely to develop? The home or school? The home or daycare? And so that begins. So these are the two things that are most important. Notice this is not conduct. This is not achievement. This is not compliance. These are the fruit of this. And so instead of looking for the fruit, we're looking for the building blocks. What are the building blocks, the foundations of healthy development? And that is what the issue is. Now, I'll go through, first of all, each one and summarize the issues there. First of all, we find that attachment requires attachment itself requires development. that you have to develop the capacity for human relationship. Relationship is the context in which everything happens. Relationship is the most significant issue among humans. And this capacity for relationship must develop. And it takes years for this to develop, and it needs very special conditions. And what needs to happen is this, and I'll explain this for those of you that have heard me. This will be a review. This is a plant analogy. What we see on top of the soil is the maturation part of the plant. This is the fruit of the plant. It's the fruit of the roots. The roots are about attachment. It is what is underneath the soil that counts most. Of course, the roots are what happened. That's why people don't see this. They are blind to it because we're all looking for results. Everybody is looking for results. The school system is completely outcome-based. It is not even process-based. It is outcome-based. You're required to meet certain outcomes in terms of the ministries, etc. It's a completely outcome. Everybody has left process. What do you do to get the outcome? It's just simply outcome-based. And so what you do. And so if you were a gardener and you were totally outcome-based and being ignorant of that which is underneath the soil, you wouldn't be a very good gardener very long because it's what's underneath the soil that counts. This is the process that leads to maturation. We can't cause maturation. What we can do is nurture attachments. Well, what needs to happen is this. A child needs to be able for this root to go down, to be with those to whom he is attached, and to be with in a way that is secure. It's not disrupted. And so the child needs to be in sight, in smell, in sound, in touch. And as the child grows, this becomes more a metaphor, can deal with other things, but can only deal with so much about not being with. And this is absolutely essential to produce any maturation. And so if this is disrupted, if there's problems here, if a child seeks to resist those that they're attached to, it goes in reverse, like in the autistic child, and so on. We have huge problems, and we have no maturation. This is absolutely dependent upon maturation, and so being with is right there. Of course, where you're with your parents is at home. This is not exactly very hard to figure out. Is you're with your parents at home. You're not with your parents when they're at school. So you get right from the bottom line of attachment theory. This is important as a context, but that's only the beginning. By the second year of life, the energy should move into being like, being the same as, taking on the same form. This is a natural way that nature has taken care of a child beginning to walk like, talk like, act like, dress like those they're attached to. All language acquisition is in terms of we now know, is an attachment process. And so we talk like those that we're attached to. And so this is a key issue of school, is literacy, is language acquisition. The problem is, if school to work, the children would need to be attached to their teachers. If they're not attached to their teachers, they're not going to talk like their teachers, they're not going to talk like their teachers, then we don't have language acquisition. So again, we ask, how is language developed? And it's one of the reasons why homeschool children are so much more articulate, generally have more language, they're more literate, they're better readers, and so on, because this is in the context of attachment, as well as taking on the same form as, and so on. This is this process. So this favors. This, of course, is very important. As soon as the attachments change, let's say a child attaches to peers, which is more likely when they're in a system that is peer-rich and adult-poor, then they start talking like each other, dressing like each other, acting like each other. This is what's usually considered to be socialization. A child is becoming normal. The great cookie-cutter of life is that they are talking like their peers, acting like their peers, dressing like their peers. But this is a huge wrong turn in society because this is actually makes them less schoolable and less integratable into society, and this also hinders the context in which children are meant to raise their potential. This crushes all individuality, all in terms of growth, and so we have huge concerns this way in society, and that's what I write about in my book. By the third year of life, It should evolve into a sense of belonging, that I belong to my mom and dad, they belong to me, possess of jealousy, and so on. Loyalty is a huge set of instincts to take the same side as, and so that I take the same side as those I'm attached to, I agree with. I try to make things work for, keep from, I'm loyal to, and including in the loyalty instincts are to serve and obey, which is very important. If a child is attached to his peers, he begins to obey his peers, to be good for his peers, his conformity. He thinks he belongs with his peers and is acts the same, seeks to be with them. And so all of this goes in a different direction instead of with the person, the adults who are meant to care. Again, this is much more likely to develop when the roots are not interrupted. The condition for full development is that we have no separation in the early years. And this is the huge thing that people don't seem to get here, is that as soon as this is disrupted, the attachment roots, instead of moving deeper, stay at a superficial level. So you can't have too much disruption in the early years if you want to go for depth of attachment. And not only that, but if there's too much disruption, if a child is transplanted too many times, a child might take one transplanting, like adoption and so on, but if a child is transplanted too many times, then these roots often, almost like some plants, they shrivel up and the child will no longer attach properly. And this is dreadful because there's no context in which this child you can create to work with this. Many of the orphanage children are like this as well. But this is meant to develop further. It gets to very, very tender places in the fourth year where the child wants to matter to his parents, to be significant, etc. And it's very important that he be in the home context, so this is being directed towards the parents. Otherwise, a child becomes preoccupied with being important and significant to his peers, which is a dreadful scenario because it fills you with incredible insecurity. Your adults are your best bet for to meet your esteem needs, your significant needs, and so on. But the fifth level, the fifth phase, is incredibly important in this, and it's where the limbic system opens up all the stops. The limbic system is the emotional brain, and by the fifth year, the child is meant to give his heart to whomever he is attached to. It's a wonderful thing as the child becomes emotionally attached, meant to fall in love with his parents or her parents. Often he'll want to marry his parents and everybody in the family, stay with them forever and ever. Hearts are on all the cards. When the child says "I love you," it's so heartfelt. It's just palpable. If you have a 4 or 5 year old at home and in this context, it's wonderful when that happens. The problem with the separation and a child going into daycare and a child going into early education experiences is that all the energy draws from the deeper attachments and moves to the least vulnerable of all attachments, which is no context in which a child can realize his potential. It isn't that he doesn't talk like those to whom he's attached. You have language acquisition, but the language of your peers, which is a different language than that which mainstreams you into adult society, you actually lose in your articulateness. But this is incredibly important. We're meant to have the hearts of our children to be able to raise them. And this is absolutely important as a context. We're meant to have their hearts. That's the way it works. It's very difficult to get the hearts of a child through the system we have now, where you have early experiences. We farm our children out to others to help raise them. And you can see that in the home, it greatly favors this. And this is exactly my experience. My experience with homeschool children is you can literally sense the tenderness of their hearts, their emotional connections, their friendships are deep friendships, they're meaningful friendships, not just hanging out with and doing the same thing as, but they are deep friendships, and their relationships with their relatives, their aunts, their grandmothers, their parents are much deeper. They've given their hearts to it. It's a context in which we were meant to be raised. And so from a developmental science point of view, it's no argument. It is, you know, that is absolutely essential. Schooling is very much of a modern invention. schooling is, we've got carried away in modern societies with it. We've been doing without schooling for tens of thousands of years as humans, and it doesn't seem, so we have to ask the question, you know, what it was only became popular after the post or the industrial society as a way of being able to prepare a workforce. And so we have to ask ourselves the question, is, are we sacrificing human potential in the experiment, in this great experiment of education? Are we doing so? And the question, the answer would be basically yes. We are really screwing up as a society. We are sacrificing the conditions necessary to grow children, and that the concern is that we have mass immaturity that's happening in our society. And so I think homeschoolers are just growing up the way they were always meant to grow up, and the way they've grown up all the time. It's the other ones that are that the schooling which is really taking society down in this way. By the sixth year of life, and this is much more likely in my experience to happen to homeschoolers than not, because this requires a protected environment where a child can fall into attachment with his parents and his relatives. The child now seeks to be seen and known from the inside out. This is recapitulated to be seen. And now a child doesn't want to have any secrets that would divide. And so you get to know what's going on within a child. You have a sense of your child. That's always been my experience, is that homeschooling parents know their children far more than anybody else does. Other parents don't have a sense of, they don't sense them from the inside. You can't dance with a child who you don't have a sense of. You've got to have a sense of intimately from the inside out. Part of it is being able to get to the rhythms, the tunes. Part of it is because they're more likely to tell you about what's going on, where that is much less likely to happen for a school child. So this is what is meant to happen. If this doesn't happen, there are huge costs. And so this is the question, is where is this more likely to happen? It's more likely to happen in a safe, caring context, a warm attachment of an adult who cares for them. And so this is much more likely to happen in home. That doesn't mean that in all homes this would happen, of course not. But this is much more likely to happen in the home context than in the school context. And so this is huge. This is the first agenda of development. The first agenda of development is to develop the capacity for a relationship. So here we would ask then, and this would be a very simple research to do in terms of this model. We could take 18-year-olds, ones that had been schooled and ones that had been homeschooled, and look at their capacity for intimacy. Do they share themselves deeply with those that they are friends with? What is their capacity for intimacy? I would think we would find incredibly that homeschoolers had much more capacity for intimacy. Therefore, they will make better marriage partners. Therefore, they will be able to invite their children more. In other words, you can see this rippling down through the effect in society. When I talk to homeschooling conventions and so on, I say, you know, you are, in a sense, the seasoning of society. This is absolutely essential to be able to give us hope in society, the great antidote to what is happening now through schooling is simply this alone would more than justify the homeschool experience. Notice this has nothing to do with education. Okay? Notice this has nothing to do with education, because education is not the essential issue in raising children. Attachment is the central issue. Okay? And so that's the thing of it, is when you realize what is the essential issue. It is attachment that is essential issue. It is emotional health that is the essential issue. Education is a little bit of a luxury, and it rides on top of this. But this is foundational. And so this is where the homeschooling would address this. So it empowers parents to fulfill their role responsibilities. First of all, when a child is properly attached, they're easier to raise. It enables parents to pass on their values and their culture. And so this looks something like this, is when children are properly attached, they have given their parents their heart, they're more deeply attached. What it does, it gives us the natural power to do what we're supposed to do. it to take charge of them, to take care of them, to act with natural authority. It renders them endearing and tolerant to each other, much more likely. This is important. They're at home. You live in close spaces. You need all the attachment to endear you to each other.
What is the best synonym to attachment?
It creates a sense of home. Now, this is incredibly important, that every child needs to feel at home with those who are taking care of him, who are raising him. They need to feel at home with those who are teaching him. Home is not a house. Home is a place of attachment. And so, again, it's very interesting that home itself is used in our language. I don't know if it is in Swedish, but home itself is different than a house. Home suggests attachment. And is this the same in Swedish? Okay. And so home suggests attachment. And so this argument itself is that no, a child needs to be at home with those to whom he feels cared for. And so if we're using it as a metaphor, but the more that is an actual fact.
It just struck me that in Swedish we have this thing, folkhemmet. The people's home. That also is a lot of attachment in it, isn't there? Isn't it?
Sort of, yes.
Something like this.
Well, in the word village, when you think the child is to be raised by a village, but the village comes from the same word in which home does. It's either hamlet or home, and it connotes a place of attachment, not a place of role responsibilities. So this is being used very often now by governments to say, yes, a child must be, it takes a whole village to raise a child. Therefore, that justifies the daycare providers, the teachers, and so on. That is not what the statement means. It means that a child must be attached to those who take care of them. And so the child must be at home with those to whom they are attached. And that allows us to provide comfort, rest, and a place of retreat. All growth happens from a place of work, not rest. And so when children are at school, everything is about performance. Nobody cares about rest. Nobody cares about them, that's okay, honey. It doesn't matter. They need a place of rest. All growth happens from a place of rest. Where is a person to rest? They rest at those they feel at home with. Where are they going to feel at home? Hopefully at home. They feel at home at home. It's a place of attachment. This is where it happens, a place of retreat. So again, attachment is far more important than schooling. It is far more important. There's no question about that. That is unequivocal in all the studies. It creates a compass point of the parent. It allows them to command their attention, guide and direct them, and transmit their culture. And so this is what school is about, getting their attention, guiding and directing, and transmitting your culture. That is what school is about. Now, a child can only do this with somebody they feel at home with. Again, it's a matter of attachment. They're more likely to be attached to their parents and should be attached to their parents than anybody else. And so automatically the pieces fall together. It activates proximity instincts like the goslings behind the mother goose. You see all over the place here now. In terms of it, that allows us to take the lead because children only follow those to whom they're attached. And so it allows us to take the lead to keep them close in the important ways. And it evokes the desire to be good for those attached to. And this is one of the most remarkable things. Everybody is concerned about children being good, children being compliant, children being well-behaved, and so on. But there's a key here, is that we only feel like being good for those to whom we are attached. Nature has protected children to be, they're meant to be difficult. So if anybody tells them what to do, tells them how to think, when the child does not feel at home with them, there's a bit of resistance. A child will say, you can't tell me what to do, you're not my mother, and there is this kind of response. And so we find that children are born difficult, except when they're at home with the person. And so it is no wonder the homeschoolers show evidence of being, they are much more well-behaved, even though that wasn't the goal, that is the result. because they are more likely to measure up to be good for those to whom that are directing them, giving them the orders. So in a sense, the thing that everybody else wants to see, children being good, the homeschoolers get, not because that's why they did it, but that is the outcome in terms of the attachment, is that children are more naturally inclined to be good for those attached to. That allows us to act with natural power and authority. In other words, it allows the parents to do the job of raising children. When children are at home with you, and I'm using that as a metaphor, when children are at home with you, it allows parents to fulfill their role responsibilities. When a child is not at home, then the parent, whoever that is, or the teacher or the daycare provider is handicapped. They do not have the ability. So attachment requires this to produce the outcome that is necessary. So this is a powerful argument for a child being at home with those who are responsible for them. Let me go to the second one. Homeschooling and home care is more likely to provide the conditions conducive to preserving healthy emotional functioning. To our surprise, emotion has become a more important and significant foundational issue in brain development and in the development of the human potential than experience, than stimulation, and then behavior. And the issue is this, primarily, that we as humans are very fragile. Heart is a symbol of both emotion and fragility. We are easily wounded. And the study of psychology from its very beginnings studied the defenses against this, the observation that the brain does not stand idly by. If the vulnerability is too great, there are defenses that are erected. Now, neuroscience studies these defenses. The first line of defenses are emotional filters. They work in the limbic system, and they start filtering out the tender feelings. And so a child, you notice feelings start missing in a child. Now, nobody's looking for that in the school system, and so they don't notice it. But a child stops saying, I miss, stops saying, I care about things. In fact, you have a chorus of children saying, I don't care, doesn't matter, whatever. You stop saying, I'm excited about this, because that's a tender feeling. You have a loss of feeling of curiosity, because that's a tender feeling. No longer does a child move to tears, to sadness and disappointment about things, because those are tender feelings. These are very important feelings in terms of the development of human beings. A child no longer says, I'm scared or I'm nervous. Those are tender feelings, and so you have a marked lack of feelings. Now, in the school system, those are valued. No teacher, no kids want children to wear their feelings on their sleeve. Okay? So tender hearts are not particularly valued. You want to be cool. You want to show you have no feelings. So the school culture is anti-emotion. It is against this. If a child should erupt in tears, if a child should erupt in sadness, which is very capable at home, the child is shamed, the child and so on. And so it's a culture in which to have feeling, you're actually shamed for. So it goes the opposite way. Deeper defense is a child can't see what makes them feel bad. So this child never talks about what distresses, can't see trouble coming, can't stay out of harm's way. And these are the defenses that are the unfortunate results of wounding environments when the wounds are too great. And the wounds, now we know, the human wounds are when a child faces too much separation, rejection, ostracization, not being liked, not being wanted, insignificant, separation in all its meanings, too much shame, to be put down, humiliated, teased, taunted, something wrong with one, and feeling too unsafe. That there is a lack of safety in that environment. The result, of course, of this is huge. If the brain has to go into defensive action, if the brain at all has to defend against the wounds that are there, this has huge cost on the maturation processes, on a child being able to realize their potential. This is hugely significant in terms of this. And so Homeschooling and home care is more likely to provide the conditions conducive to preserving healthy emotional functioning. Keeping a child at home protects a child against the stress of premature separation. Separation is the biggest wound of all, and premature separation simply means when a child cannot hold on to preserve a sense of connection when apart. Now, the answer to this, of course, is a deeply rooted attachment. If a child has a deeply rooted attachment, has given the heart away, by 5 or 6 years of age, they're much more capable of being apart without losing a sense of connection. But that would take some time to develop that kind of relationship. Premature separation, when you face separation of any kind, when you face separation, it leads to three powerful root emotions. The pursuit of proximity, which school children show, wanting to belong to each other, be important to each other, significant to each other, to be esteemed by each other, and now the attachment technology, email and texting and so on. Frustration. Which if a child is full of frustration, will erupt in aggression. Homeschooling children are much less aggressive than school-age children. They're much less frustrated. And and this frustration, aggression is escalating in our society among children. And alarm. Children are alarmed, showing anxiety problems and agitation problems and adrenaline problems. When the alarm becomes very dysfunctional, children start seeking excitement. They start seeking adrenaline. They do things, watch horror movies and so on. Again, school children are much more likely to be attracted to danger, to be attracted to alarm than homeschool children, which are much more tender. They're easily moved to caution. They're much more likely to feel their fear, to be afraid, and so they're much more likely to be healthy in this way. And then if the separation is unbearable, we have another whole host. Children reattach often to their peers. They begin to be alpha children, bossing their parents around, telling their parents what to do, being prescriptive and so on, and the deeper defensiveness of numbing out and tuning out signs that we're seeing among school-age children all over the world is that this is actually increasing. The mental health of school-age children is rapidly decreasing, of preschool children, of adolescents, all of these. It's the homeschoolers are developing the way they're meant to be. It's the other ones that are deteriorating. It's not that, you know, when you think that homeschool have an advantage, it's actually the other way. This is simply the way it was always meant to be. This is historically, in terms of context, this is in sync with natural design. The argument should never be, why do you homeschool your children? It would always be the other way. Why in the world have you sent your children to school? When you look at all the statistics, how can you ever justify sending your children to school? It makes no sense whatsoever. And so a homeschooler should never have to defend what they're doing in any way or shape or form, because there's nothing to defend. You're simply following what has always happened historically. A safe emotional attachment shields the child against a wounding world. A safe emotional attachment shields the child here. This is very important. We know from research that peer interaction is a major source of wounding. Even 2- and 3-year-olds are experiencing this from each other, and it causes great defensiveness. We already see 3-year-olds that have lost their fear, who no longer say, I'm scared. Great indicator. The greatest indicator of adolescent violence is a 3-year-old who's lost his feelings of alarm. There's nothing for a tender child to start losing his feelings than being in a wounding environment.
Apropos that, I've noticed sometimes when I've been in parks with children, some children have run up to me, small children, and they've almost jumped into my lap, and I've been really surprised because I'm a stranger to them.
Yes.
And it really sort of shocked me that this child has no sort of...
No appropriate shyness, no appropriate shyness, and so on. Yeah. This is what is meant to protect children. Is a strong emotional attachment with a caring adult. So if the child has given his heart to mom and dad, then what mom and dad think of him is more important than what the peers think of him, what others think of him, and so on. And so the child is very well attached, according to the research, has given his heart, is emotionally connected with a caring adult. And again, to the degree that the child is attached to mom and dad here, it's most likely to happen to give his heart in the home situation. Then he automatically becomes shielded against against the external wounds. He may be teased, he may be taunted, he may be shamed when there is peer interaction, but it has less effect because what mom and dad think of him is more important than what anybody else. However, when the child loses this shield and peers become more important, there's no protection against external wounds. This is a vulnerability that's too much to bear. And again, what I talk about in the book, the legacy of that is dreadful.
Is anyone in here a homeschooled person? Has anyone in here been homeschooled? Except Elba. Anyway,
none of us are the result.
I think one issue for people in confronting the effect of homeschooling is to actually realize for yourself, and this is really hurting, I feel it's hurting for me, that you're really school damaged.
Mm, yes.
And you have to realize.
Yes.
Yes. And you have to get in touch with those.
That's right.
Kind of feelings.
That's right.
To actually realize what homeschooling is about.
Yeah.
And that's stepping on people's toes.
Yes. That's right. That's a tender place.
Is it also possible one has to get over the feeling of inability or insufficiency? Being sort of damaged in that. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty damaged after my experiences in school. And I feel like, homeschool, God, I can never do that.
And I think that would be part of it because you lose the natural confidence in your own organism.
Yeah.
Your trust in your own organism is your belief, well, this is natural. I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, because we tend to put schooling there, it didn't work with me, so how could I possibly...
Yes.
My experience was that bad.
That's right. Yes.
How can I do a better job?
Well, the problem is the problem is part of the effect of school is to be able to be prepared to live in a wounding environment. The brain has to numb you out and to tune you out. Once you're tuned out, you can't remember bad things happened as well. You distressing. And so the adult world is, I'm fine, look at me. Now, when the person who says that, you look at them and says, oh my goodness, do they not know? I'm fine, look at me. I can't remember anything bad happening to me. It's just, because you're prepared for a wounding environment. And that is the issue. That is the issue. I'm just going to developmental tasks in raising children. Right relationships and soft hearts end up to be the essential prerequisites on the part of the child for successfully fulfilling the two developmental tasks of childhood. So now just to finish this argument, there are two developmental tasks of childhood, two very critical tasks that are important to bring a child to psychological maturity and to render a child fit for mainstream society. Now, there's no argument in terms of the school doesn't even pretend to grow children up because they don't even know how to do this and so on and so on. And children need to be homegrown. There's no question about this. Children need to be homegrown. And that's why, to bring a child to psychological maturity, we can see this seems to be the controversial area. But I'm just going to touch on these, and then we'll take time for some questions. Just going to touch on these. So bringing a child to psychological maturity, two understandings are paramount here. Emotion is the engine of maturation, and attachment is the womb of maturation. Okay, so emotion and attachment are the main players in the maturation process. Emotion is the engine of maturation, it's specifically tender feelings. And so here you can see all the movement. Here is just a picture, the engine of maturation. We wondered what this was. We find out it is emotion, meaning in Latin, to move, Latin to move, and that is what moves us to mature, and it requires a tender heart to be able to move us to sadness and disappointment, when we're up against the things we cannot change, for a transformation, to mixed feelings. All the things in the maturation process are a result of spontaneous movement, but it requires a tender heart. If a child becomes defended, numbed out against this, we have arrested development. We can't get it both ways. You can't have a brain that goes into defensive action. Now, when a child is in wounding environments continually for a few hours a day, we have a huge problem. And we now contest this, even at a 2 or 3 year old level, where you put a child into an environment while they're away from their attachments, the cortisol levels go spike so high that it endangers brain development. I mean, this should be a no-brainer, that children simply are not allowed to leave home until they are capable of doing so. An attachment is the womb of maturation. It is the place in which individuality develops. The deeper the attachment, the more room for individuality. In adolescence, the answer is a deep attachment. Children don't have to separate. A plant doesn't separate to grow up, has to become deeply attached to grow up. And so this is the answer for adolescence as well, to become deeply attached. And so the other issue, rendering a child fit for society, two understandings are paramount here. It is maturation, not schooling or socializing, which is what equips a person for living in community. This seems to be the best kept secret in developmental science, but it's very clear that it's maturation, not schooling. And so children do not respect the separateness of others until they emerge into separate beings themselves. This is a fruit of the emergent or individuation process, which requires a healthy womb of attachment and an emotional health in terms of functioning. And what prepares a person for living in community are the capacities for consideration, for self-control, and for preserving togetherness without loss of separateness, all ones in which homeschoolers show much more developed in. These are all the fruit of the integrative process requiring prefrontal cortex support and development. The integrative process is not a result of experience, of teaching, or so on. The integrative process comes from being able to feel your feelings, being able to mix your feelings, have mixed feelings, and this requires, again, a soft heart and to be easily moved to this. And so preschoolers show a much greater capacity for being able to say, part of me feels scared and part of me feels excited. I'm of two minds. And so cognitive dissonance and emotional discord, which are the very essences of both maturation and the ability to live in community without the loss of individuality, togetherness without the loss of separateness. So again, it's very, very clear that we cannot produce this in school. It's the exception of the in school is to be survived. It is not a place that is at all aligned with healthy development. Some people survive it better than others. If you've got a very good home environment, you can survive it better, but it has very little to do with what brings a child into healthy development. Secondly, the socialization attachments required to shoehorn a child into mainstream society require diligent matchmaking on the part of the adults the child is attached to. Generally, in traditional societies, the parents introduce their children to the heroes, to the mentors, to the individuals the roles that will help shoehorn that child into society. This takes careful matchmaking. When the child is 13, 14, and 15, the school simply does not have either the understanding or the caring to do this, and so children attach to each other instead of being able to attach. So socializing attachments include role identifications, group identifications, their family, their clan, their country, their tribe, their peoples, their religion, their customs, their traditions, their gods, their heroes, their mentors, all of this. This is something that the family is meant to do, whatever it is that is important. If you're Jewish, it will be to the rabbi. It will be teaching the Greek, the introducing to your God. If it is whatever it is, this becomes important to be able to do this. School does not do this, and so today's school children attach to entertainers, want to become rock stars, to sports heroes. These are very immature people that do not shoehorn anybody into society. No wonder they are not integrating into society. No wonder our schools are flunking as socialization agents. Their mandate is to render children fit for society. That's exactly what they are flunking at. And so it does not justify the effort put into this because it is not what is happening. So the conclusion is basically the homeschooling advantage has relatively little to do with the child's home education and everything to do with the providing the conditions conducive to healthy development, right relationships and soft hearts. What happens is that education simply happens. The child happens to learn. Everything is healthy, and the child happens to learn. And it's quite accidental, it's quite incidental, it's quite spontaneous. And I always say to homeschooling parents, don't worry about it. You know, provide the conditions, right relationships and soft hearts, and all the rest will unfold. It will unfold relatively easy. It's not that big a deal. Because you do this, the rest is more the fruit or the outcome. Why is education not jeopardized in homeschooling? Why is this? Because the conditions typically provided in homeschool environment tend to produce very good learners. And good learners are more important than trained teachers. Good learners are by far the most important part of the equation. And so good learners can make up for a complete lack of training whatsoever, and for chaotic curriculum. It can make up for all kinds of things and even for no technology whatsoever. And so the good learner is by far the most important part in the equation, and that's why it really is rather irrelevant in terms of whether or not you have the academic credentials. What are the attributes of a good learner? Curious and interested with a passion for learning. That's why these kids are favored by Ivy League universities. Sense of agency in their learning. They feel like they're in the driver's seat. This is huge in the learning thing, and that's why these are so valued in their learning. They're able to learn from the mistakes and from trial and error because they have tender hearts and can feel sad about the things that do not work. You have to be able to feel sad and disappointed. This is the big thing that's missing in school-age children. They're too numbed out. And they're self-motivated and independent in their learning process. This is highly valued to go the distance. If you want your child to go the distance, most likely to realize their full potential as a learner, it is much better to go in this direction. And homeschool children tend to be attached to their teachers. That is, the teachers here are the parents or the relatives, thus harnessing the most powerful force in attention and learning. This more than compensates for the lack of professional training on the parents' part. This is a far more important factor here. So why is homeschooling the preferred option for children with special needs? Very simply, the more dysfunctional or disabled, the more in need of a strong working attachment with a caring adult to compensate for the deficits. This is true in all organisms. The more crippled, the more handicapped, the more in need of attachments in order to function. Not experts, because there are less attachments there. The more in need. In every single kind of problem, whether it's autism, whether it's everything, the answer is right relationships and soft hearts. The cure is the same, what we need to compensate. So in actual fact, the homeschooling becomes the preferred option for special needs rather than the other way. The more inherently vulnerable the child is, the more inherently vulnerable, sensitive, easily wounded, the more in need of protection from premature separation and from wounding environments to preserve emotional health and maturation potential. And this is where the miracles come from that I've seen over and over again. When children are brought home in the environment there, and even if I say, don't even worry about curriculum for the first year, just get out of the wounding environment. This is a delicate child, very easily wounded. You see incredible results, far more effective in my experience than any kind of expert treatment and so on, simply by providing, bringing the child where they were meant, they were designed to be. For 10,000s of years, they were in this, and then we have now, for some reason, lost our senses about this. And so the keys to raising children, as I say, are right relationships, soft hearts. If the keys to raising children are right relationships and soft hearts, and there's no developmentalist that would disagree with this, if this is it, then it is quite obvious that homeschooling is more likely to provide these keys. Homeschooling is where this is more likely to happen. And so This hopefully this makes sense to you. It turns everything on the other way around. It should be so that you never ever have to justify homeschooling or would need to do this, but certainly the governments will need to justify why in the world they send children to school, because it makes no sense from developmental science. So that ends this the formal part of it. Now we have some time for questions. Thank you.
I do have a question about, there are not just child-parent relationship, there is child-mother relationship and there is child-father relationship. That's two different relationships,
yes.
I guess.
Yes.
And I think the bonding to the mother is the key issue here.
Yes.
So would you say that the mother, at least in our relationship, I would say she's the master of attachment?
Generally speaking,
she is the master of attachment.
Yes, generally speaking, yes, for reasons of chemistry, biology, and history, the mother is often the stronger, the deeper attachment. Interesting enough, historically, the father was the one that did the homeschooling. This is a new idea of homeschooling in the last few decades, where the mother takes the lion's share rather than the father. The father was ideal in a sense for homeschooling. Traditionally, a child only needs one functioning attachment to really develop. They only need one womb. They don't need both mom and dad, but mom needs a huge supporting cast. Okay. And the male is to be the first in the line of that supporting cast. Today's males often compete rather than provide. And so it's not to be equal rights, it's to be support. Now, sometimes dads make better moms, and we all know this, but for the most part, the mom is there and needs a supporting cast, and that supporting cast includes the father and all those around. It meant that the main problem that I have seen in homeschooling is when the child in getting homeschooled loses a mother. And that has been the main difficulty. And so when this has happened, and when a mother cannot both be mom and teacher simultaneously, when this seems to be sacrificed in this, you can see the advantage of getting other relatives involved. And for instance, we're involved in my grandson's homeschooling. So that's much easier sometimes for my grandson's mother to be involved. And my grandson's aunt is involved in his homeschooling. And so it is a very interesting kind of solution, which it makes it easier because she finds it difficult to be able to do this and to not be a mother. So this is a way of being able to surround both support and being able to provide Julian with a mother. And yet, because Julian has not been able to survive in the school system, his sensitivity is great, to be able to get his feelings back and to work with him, we've had to bring him into the home situation in which to be able to school him.
Is that because of mother, sort of the conflict of roles in a way, mother, teacher?
Yes, well, it's part of her personality. My daughter is a professional musician, and they're just different personalities. They're all where they are, but they're not anywhere else. They can't tell time, they can't, and so on, and so this is, they're nocturnal. Yeah, they're nocturnal. This isn't, so there are certain things that have to do with that. And yet she is very invested in being the best mother she could be. But she, this being both a teacher and a mother, it just for her don't work very well.
You said traditionally it was men who were the
traditionally men. It was the father yes. And traditionally it was the father who provided the home schooling to leave the mother in to be able to focus on the mother. Okay? And it seems to me that sometimes the best scenarios where their homeschooling is very, very common, like in Canada, you easily create co-ops whereby you share. Homeschooling cooperatives are the big thing, where you share responsibilities, and so the load is not all on one person. And this tends to work much better.
You are from Canada.
Yes.
It should be interesting. What is the story about homeschooling in Canada? Was it always there? Did you have some struggle?
I don't think so. In Canada, always education is compulsory. School is optional. And so I think that's always been the way it is. It has more been to be able to public sentiment. It has been winning sense. But as far as legally, Canada is so widespread that going to school was impractical for many children. And so this was never really an issue to get them to school. The issue is you had to educate many children at home. And so the parents were responsible to make sure their children were educated. But school is has always been optional. And so it's not something we've had to struggle with legally. It's just struggling with it in terms of attitude. Do I? Yes.
But is there a possibility to be prepared to go into this role?
Oh, yes. There's so many options available. You have homeschooling using the ministry curriculum. You have homeschooling using all kinds of other curriculums. You have homeschooling using all using the internet and or video conferencing with teachers. You have our ministry, our provincial ministry provides all kinds of options for doing this. So they do it within the ministry curriculum. In some school districts, your professional development, when I go in and I teach teachers how to teach, all the homeschoolers, educators are come to those as well. And so I've gone to districts where one-third of my audience are teach at home, and then one-third are they. They sit side by side each other and learn from each other. Like it's a much different atmosphere. When it opens up in the prevailing attitude, when it opens up, it actually is wonderful, because the homeschoolers win all the prizes, all the academic prizes, all, you know, etc. All of a sudden you begin to see this in its context, that there's nothing to be afraid of. In fact, it is a huge advantage. It is an antidote to the great fear orientation in society.
And the parents relearn a lot when they are...
Yes. Yes, my biggest thing is to help parents overcome their apprehensions. You know, they think, oh, how am I ever going to do this? You know, how am I going to replace a teacher? I say, don't replace a teacher. You don't have to. When your child starts learning, they'll learn spontaneously, and it takes very little effort. You don't have to worry about these things. You know, well, how about the curriculum? Well, you can download that. Well, it'll take a minute or two. You'll take a look at it, and you say, well, my child is already here. Maybe I need to do this, and so on. And, well, how do I know that my child will get into Harvard University? Well, Harvard University, all of these universities have a special homeschooling kind of thing. If you want to be able to find out how to get to your school, what it is that's required, they'll help you do this. It's not going to disadvantage your child any.
I think the biggest brain bomb that I can put on homeschoolers or anyone is when I say, yes, we have been unschooled. We learned from the United States after a while when we took contact with the world, when we started homeschooling, that we are unschoolers. We are called unschoolers.
Yes.
We do not have a curriculum.
Yes, that's a particular... There's many different approaches to homeschooling, and you have many options within it of what fits for you, what works for you.
And when you don't have a curriculum, the first thing people will ask you, how will your child get into university?
Yes.
And I can tell you now, all of those three that were homeschooled, because we have four, but all those three that were homeschooled are out of the school system. Mm-hmm. And one of our, the oldest one, just finished out from Karolinska Institutet this year. So his first school day was at university, at Karolinska Institutet. That was his first school day all his life. So everything...
That's
about,
unusual in Sweden.
That's
yes.
Sweden. Yeah. Yeah, it's very unusual. Mm.
Yes.
So how did they ever take him in without...
That's a long story, but they told, because, you see, it's usually more... it's not so difficult for me to talk to very academical people, because they will understand it, because they know the problems in the university.
Yes.
So there, what they said the first day was, here is one person who already knows that he's going to do this by own strength.
Yes.
All of the rest
that's
of
right.
went to school.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And that is more important.
Right now in
yes.
Sweden is that so many people think that they can tell me what they think about something that they don't know anything about.
Mm.
And that's the problem, that this is what they are going to vote for on the 22nd.
Mm.
So many people are going to say yes or no to something that they actually should said, I'm responsible for what I'm going to say here, and I must tell you I can't say nothing, I can't vote, because actually I do not know anything about what I'm going to vote for.
We have a number of other questions in just 10 minutes here,
yes.
So we'll move it on. Yes, 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 yes. Absolutely. That is very important to realize. You because this is about attachment, and you know you can provide for the attachment needs and the emotional needs of a child without having any maturity yourself. Your children will go far beyond you, you know, and you can do this. And that's the beauty of it, is that you can do this. You don't have to be ahead of your children. You don't have to do this. And when you do this, you find yourself maturing as a result. It, when you become the parent your child needs, it stretches you, so it becomes a natural growth process without having to pay for therapy. It's absolutely, you know, absolutely free. You don't have to go for this. Yeah. That part, yes, but then it doesn't produce the conditions conducive. You know, I said not every home can do this. Not every home can provide a safe environment for their children. And in those homes, school is sometimes the better alternative. Okay, so not everyone. This isn't just a matter of maturity. This is, you know, but maturity can play a part in it, to be able to have the self-control when one has very strong emotions and so on, to do this. Yes, that plays a part in it. But it is necessary to create the conditions whereby children can have soft hearts and be fully developed in relationships. Those